So whether it's an email newsletter, whether it's a lead magnet, content on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram videos, understanding this can make it a lot easier to produce content because you're not trying to step into a thought leader space. You're not trying to make 60 seconds or 140 characters of the best content that you've accumulated over decades of life and experience. It's not that intense. What you're looking to do is make people just a little bit smarter, give them a little bit more direction, give them a little bit of your perspective to leave them better off.
Better Than Rich. So listener, you're in for another treat today with Zach Zeller. This guy gets into the weeds. I'm talking into the nitty gritty on email and digital marketing. I really think you're going to enjoy this. He is an expert at helping you upgrade your email copy, how to partner with AI, how to use it to your advantage. We go into a lot of the marketing nitty gritty that I think you're going to love. And one of the cool things that Zach gave, he gave a 7-day email list revamp offer at the end of this episode. I think you're really going to enjoy that because not only is it free, but it's a huge, huge value add for you. So another great episode of the Better Than Rich Show with Zach Zeller talking about leveling up your email marketing game. Get ready for another great time with myself and Zach. Welcome to the Better Than Rich Show with your hosts, Andrew Biggs and Mike Abramowitz. The Better Than Rich Show helps ambitious leaders who are on a mission to leave the world better than they found it, change their perspective on what's important, increase their income and impact, and systemize their life and business. If you've ever struggled with finding your purpose, have felt disconnected or distracted, or found yourself going through the motions, this show will remind you that what you do matters and will re-inspire you to chase your highest dreams. It's time for you to become better than rich. Welcome back to the Better Than Rich Show. I'm your host today, Mike Abramowitz, and I'm here with Zach Zeller. Welcome to the show, brother.
Hey, I'm really excited and pleased to be on here with you.
We're excited to have you. It's not every day that we have an expert in email marketing and marketing strategies and everything that you do for your clients and inside of your community. I could assure you, listener, I'm going to be pulling out some stuff from this gentleman today that can help you with prospecting, lead gen, conversion, and email marketing. So I'd like to start with that. Like, how do you define marketing? If someone's listening here, I know sometimes people think of marketing in one way. Sometimes they combine marketing and sales. It's such a loose term. What is marketing defined to you and to your students and your community? How would you define that?
Yeah, the way that I think of it is marketing is just connecting cool people with cooler solutions. And that sounds like the 10,000 foot view of it. Really, the way that I view it is adding value to a specific audience to help them get from point A to point B. So you have people who have a problem, whether they know it or not. For example, if I'm overweight and I want to get fit, my problem may be that the gym's super far away. I'm not an athlete. I don't want to get injured. And I don't want to eat like a bird to miss out on all the foods that I love. So value for that could just be saying, hey, you can eat pizza and eat burgers and still lose weight. There's an approach that can do that. That you don't need to go all the way to the gym, you could work out at home. And it doesn't have to be tactical. It could just be shaping their beliefs to let them know that what they want is achievable too.
Great explanation. Do you follow Alex Ramosi at all?
Yeah, he helped me a lot building up our chat sales team when I was working on that with people.
Nice. Yeah, because that's what I heard. Obviously, he started in the health space, but it's like his value equation of making sure that it gives them the highest results in the shortest period of time without delay, with the least amount of consequence, his little value equation, which is true. That's how my health coach got me. It's like, hey, you could eat pizza and burgers if you want. We just got to follow a program, macros. I mean, calories in versus calories out. So to your point, there is a solution, but the marketing aspect, what I just heard you say is, let's talk to the destination, not necessarily the airplane that gets us to the destination. Is there anything additional that you want to piggyback on under this umbrella of marketing? Because I'd like to get in and pick your brain on some of the tactical stuff that we can do to, okay, marketing is speaking to my insecurities and my fears and helping me find solutions for them or see that there are solutions with least amount of consequence. Is there more you want to add to that before we like go into, great, what's the so what of that?
Yeah, the biggest piece that I would add to Hormozi's value equation is the appeal of it. Hermosa's equation, just in case anyone's been missing out from that, is top of the equation, you have the outcome you're promising and the likelihood of success. And what you're trying to do on the bottom side of that equation is reduce the effort and reduce the time it takes to get to those results. A big piece that's missing is the appeal, or how fun, how exciting, how high status it is to get to that outcome as well.
And with what you teach specifically, and what you offer, and what you've learned, how might someone play to that? How might someone be able to, okay, I understand what you're saying about marketing, but what does that do for me as a business owner? With this information, how do I take information and turn it into implementation to get results for my business?
Yeah, frankly, most commonly, I see this lowers the bar for people creating content. So whether it's an email newsletter, whether it's a lead magnet, content on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram videos, understanding this can make it a lot easier to produce content because you're not trying to step into a thought leader space. You're not trying to make 60 seconds or 140 characters of the best content that you've accumulated over decades of life and experience. It's not that intense. What you're looking to do is make people just a little bit smarter, give them a little bit more direction, give them a little bit of your perspective to lead them better off. As a rule, I got this from famous copywriter Gary Bensavenga. He suggests that you make your marketing itself valuable. I know I keep throwing around the word value. A lot of marketers do that, and it's super abstract. But for me, when I think of this in an email or content in any form, I think of what's the one thing I want my audience to take from this? And it could be a realization that I had, a belief that I learned the hard way. It could be a really tactical thing of, hey, here's how you go in and push the buttons and get a result. And that's good. But the problem is a lot of that tactical cookie cutter knowledge that you can use AI to come out with, that can come from anyone. And so it doesn't create a strong moat around you and your brand if what you're saying could have come from anyone. But the things that could have come from you are your own journey, your own beliefs, your own perspective on the situation. That's where that real magic comes from, where it's not just a summary from ChatGPT, it's a story from your life that sticks more with people, that is more entertaining, and has the message sink in a little bit deeper in your prospect's mind.
This is good because I am a user and a believer in what ChatGPT and what AI can do, especially with if it's used properly, especially with the tone analyzer and the writing style. Because sometimes like I'll write something and then I'll put it into ChatGPT and I'll say, can you write this in Mike Abramowitz's writing style? And just to see, I'll create something and then I'll see how it creates. And I'm like, damn, it's kind of better. You know, sometimes I'm just like, damn, I think it did a better job than me. I want to write like that. That sounds better, right? From my lens, there's a partnership between AI and the human. What is your take on that? Does that play a part in some of this at all for you? Or are you like, no, that bot stuff sucks. I don't like it. I don't buy into it. I think it's inauthentic. And I think people, it can't pass the smell test. Or like I just said, there's maybe a balance between the two where they do join together at some point. What's your take on that?
All right, you're going to love this. I originally heard this from Donald Trump, which I don't want to scare anyone that I'm going to something super controversial, but he was talking about this section in The Art of the Deal where he was going around to all these properties with his dad and watching these buildings go up. Doing that, he learned how much each brick costs, how much it costs to put in these windows, how long it takes to retile a bathroom, whatever it is. And the reason I share this is because he used that knowledge to plan projects and set up budgets to build Trump Towers and facilities and make a lot of money that way. Whether you're using AI or whether you're hiring a team member or working with VAs, if you don't have a foundational understanding of what it takes to create content or to do the job, whatever it may be, you're going to come out with a bad product. It's classic garbage in, garbage out. So if you just go to AI and you say, you use it very intentionally and smart as a co-pilot tool, But if you went to ChatGPT and you just said, hey, I'm writing an email about why businesses should buy back their time, for example, I got the book behind you, so it's top of mind. It's going to put out this generic story, not even a story, but generic advice that could have come from anyone, whether they had a business or whether they read the back of Dan's book or whether they know anything or not. But if you took the time to write the first draft and you say, when I was building my business, like for me, I was building a chat sales team and I started running that. We started getting good results, but I realized that even if I worked 24 hours a day, four team members putting in 6 to 8 hours a day would outnumber me and get even better results because they'd be fresher, they would have more focus, and that would be what was best for the business and frankly, best for my sanity because working 24 hours a day is not possible or sustainable. So that's my take on it, where if you don't abdicate completely and put your results completely in the hands of AI or a VA or team member like that, then you'll be able to get what's unique to you and get the right result from your content specifically.
I think it's a good response because you do want to have that foundation. I think the foundation of education is important. I think it's funny how unique the world is that we live in, that we have to give a disclaimer when you mention the name Donald Trump.
Yeah.
It's just such a unique world that we live in where we have to, hey, I'm going to say a name, but I got to give a disclaimer to make sure that name isn't polarizing to an audience. Like, what the fuck? I don't know.
I don't know if YouTube would take the video down or anything if I mentioned that.
It's just so wild that we have to say that. I don't give a disclaimer if I say, hey, I'm going to mention Hitler real quick. I was just like, what? Regardless, it's just so funny. Here's a question that I'm curious on is, let's say I'm a business owner and I created this awesome, beautiful content and I spent these hours, minutes, days, whatever you fill in the blank of time, and I created this beautiful content, but people aren't reading it. Or how do I know people are reading it? It's like, how do I know it's working? What do you teach to your students, your clients? I'm paying decent money to make sure this content is awesome, but no one's reading it. Or if they are reading it, how do I know it's converted? What are the analytics? What are the metrics? And how do you move that? Is it like specific subject titles that get a higher open rate? Is it the little text that's in the email where it's in my Gmail, you could see like the first maybe 100 characters or whatever it is and making sure that's intentional. Some people get like hundreds of emails a day. What the heck? I'm not going to open them all. My VA opens them all for me and decides which one should get my attention. That's not everyone, of course, but how do we break through the noise to actually get someone to read this beautiful content that we just created, assuming the business owner is now sold on the fact I should have really good content that I'm actually putting in my email?
Yeah. So that's probably the most frustrating thing business owners face when creating content. So over 2023, I had probably like the biggest failure in my business to date, where I was working with Dustin. He runs the Podcast Raiders, teaching people how to be a profitable podcast guest. And he built that business up super fast, but he had no email. He needed more help because he was filling these podcasters by doing hand-to-hand combat on LinkedIn and just reaching out to people. And when I initially started working with Dustin, I was taking over his LinkedIn content and we weren't touching email at all. And we had that problem because it was great. We were posting content consistently. We were getting comments and likes and a handful of shares, which was cool, but it wasn't turning into clients. And really, anyone who's producing content should keep an eye on, is this actually turning into revenue? Are people getting on calls with me and saying, hey, I saw your video or I saw your post or my friend sent this to me and it was really interesting and I wanted to reach out? And maybe people don't voluntarily share that with you, but even asking them how they found you would be a really good metric to keep in mind. But with Dustin, I was writing his LinkedIn content 5 posts a week for 4 months and we weren't seeing any results. And that's when I talked to him and said, hey, let's pivot to email. I'm really good at email stuff. He had a list of less than 600 people, but I know a lot of email stuff. And I told him I'm certain that we can knock this out of the park, or at least he paid me up front. So the longer I wrote, the more it was a lose-lose situation for both of us because he wasn't getting any leads or sales. And I was putting a lot of work into reviewing the data, trying to test new things, see what works. So I'm like, I can do your email for a month. If I don't get you an ROI here, then I don't know what to tell you because I can't do your LinkedIn content for the rest of my life. We need a way to exit with this. So we agreed, moved forward. The first month we did $15,000 in sales from his email list that he hadn't really sent anything out to aside from a few thought leadership posts. that's a really good indication that your content works. So the reason I'm sharing this is if you're not seeing results from your social media content, a strategy I like to do is push people towards a more intimate experience where maybe it's your membership community, maybe it's an email list. I view marketing as a game of fences and ladders. So if you could take people from the greater social media world where there's a lot more distractions, it's a lot tougher for people to respond to your content because you're battling against the algorithm, you're battling against all this other stuff. If you can get them an email, which isn't perfect, it's not a one-on-one face-to-face conversation, but it's that little fence. It is a step into your world, then you'll be able to see replies if people are opening, if people are clicking, you'll have more control over that. So that's where I would start. And then based off of that email, you're getting data. And that's the big problem with content as well, where if you're posting on LinkedIn and you're getting 20 people to comment or 100 impressions or 500 impressions per post, that's not a lot of data to see what the thousands or hundreds of thousands of people in your market are really resonating or responding to. You just don't have as much reach and you don't have as much feedback. So email is a better way to test offers, to send out different subject lines, to see what people open and test that way and see the efficacy and the results of the topics that you're talking about.
A couple follow-ups. First question, I'm going to just give you the questions. You could go in whatever order. Question number one, what would you say to a business owner that says, doesn't it feel like weird that I hire someone else to write my content for me? Does that take away or negate from what we talked about in the beginning of this episode, which is it's my stories, it's my voice, it's my stuff that I want to add to my community? I just want to play devil's advocate and hear your response to that. That's number one. And then number two is one of the strategies that I've heard, and I'd like to hear your take on it, is sending a text message with an email, and the text is directing them to the email to increase the open rate. So it'd be like, hey, I just sent you an email with this and this. Check it out. I think you'll find it helpful. Like something like that to increase open rate. Is there a strategy that you like to use similar to that, or maybe that strategy in general? And then as far as the third question on that is, when you're doing split testing and you're testing the different subject lines and you're testing the initial phrasing, how much data do you like to collect, or how many posts do you like to collect before you make any changes? What is the threshold that you like to go by to say, all right, this was enough evidence to say this is working, or this is enough evidence to say we should try something different? What is your metrics for decision-making there? So those are my three-part questions. You go whatever direction you want and in any order you want.
Yeah. With the SMS stuff, I'll tackle that first. SMS is a more personal way to communicate. And so if you're sending, I'd say from what I've seen, if you're texting more than once a week, and those SMSs have offers or they're more salesy, or they send to an email that isn't necessarily highly valuable. Like I would send a weekly SMS to a new podcast episode. I wouldn't necessarily send it to an email because you're going to have people unsubscribe. And also SMS is more expensive than sending email. So there's going to be a trade-off in terms of how much money you want to spend to continue to reach out to people. And really, that question asks about the strategy of the email itself, because is the goal to have more open rates? I don't really think so. I view email as the ultimate safety net for your business, because whatever business you're in, you're paying money to get leads or customers. Whether you're directly paying money, whether it's your time cost, whether it's a team member producing content on your behalf, there's a cost associated with getting in front of people. And if you don't follow up with them and if you don't nurture them right, that cost ends at the moment that they decide they don't want to hop on a call or buy from you or watch your VSL or whatever it is. It stops at that top of the funnel. But if you get them on an email list, you can continue to educate and motivate them for the next 50 plus years. And I've heard stories of people that clients tell me all the time. I had a client come to me after watching my live every week for 5 months. And I knew this guy in my network for 20 years. And then he realized, hey, it was the time to buy now. This person was getting my monthly newsletter for 7 years. And then they decided to buy. I don't view open rates as the metric that we're going for most people. I view it as 20 to 30% of the people on your list should be opening your emails, but it's going to be a different 20% every single time. And they're going to go through phases of life where with you, maybe they're really happy to hustle and work like crazy, but then their wife tells them that she's pregnant and it's, how am I going to work in my business with this new baby, all this? And it's, okay, it's time to have systems. It's time to delegate. Who can I learn about this from? Let's learn from Mike. Let's work with him. I'm really in market for that. And they may have been a good fit for your solution the past 12 months before this hypothetical wife is pregnant, but it isn't until they really feel that need and have that event and wake up that they're paying attention to you, paying attention to your emails. So you never really know. And based on our data, we see 4 to 5 times more people buy over a long period of time. That long period of time can depend. Usually with coaching, especially like on social media, where I had a lot of data for this, we would see like 3 to 5% of people buy within the first like 7 days. And that was the majority of people who would buy within a short period of time. And then over the next 90 days, we would have 4 to 5 times more sales just because they would know us more. They would see more proof. They wouldn't feel so pressured. That's how I feel about sending more SMSs to get more email open rates. I do like SMS as reminders for calls and things like that, but I wouldn't necessarily send more than one SMS a week.
I think it's a good response. I agree with you 100% on the SMS not being excessive and making sure it's used intentionally, because we don't want people to unsubscribe. We just want to direct their eyeballs potentially to an inbox. But to your point, maybe they don't need their eyeballs on that inbox for this specific season of life that they're in. It is a good take. I'm glad you shared what you shared, because I didn't think about it in those terms, because it is. There are certain seasons when I'm like really interested in crypto, or I'm interested in real estate. I'm on these newsletters and these emails, and sometimes I'll open them and sometimes I don't. So it's just a matter of allowing the audience to decide on when they want to open those emails. The biggest lesson that I hear there is you just got to be persistent and consistent with making sure that things are happening all the time. So that way they can have easy access. You can be top of mind at the moment your audience needs you to be top of mind. So excellent. What would you say to the other two? The data, how do you know when things are working or when to shift? And then someone that might push back on, you want me to tell my story, but yeah, I'm going to hire someone else to tell my story for me. What would you say to that? So either of those directions.
Yeah. So data is really easy, because most people are not at the level where data really means anything, that they want a split test, but they only have a couple thousand people on their email list. They don't have the data to do that. What I like to use is anyone could go online for the Neil Patel split test calculator. And so if you actually want to do that, what we would do is we would look at data that's statistically significant and we would just plug it in. So we would have 5,000 people get email A or subject line A, 5,000 people get email B, and we would just see the difference in the clicks or the open rates as a count. And then the calculator would just say, hey, this is a significant difference. Hey, it's not, because it's not just enough to say that option A or close A works better than close B, because you need to test that out over enough people. So a really simple example, and this would drive me nuts when I was working with teams of copywriters and managing them, because they would get really excited being the creative copywriters they were, and they would test out maybe a new close or a new lead or whatever it is, and they would see sales like spike up. But the problem is maybe only a handful of people saw that copy. And because this was in a chat closing context, they're focusing on the chats that they sent the new exciting response to. They're missing out that maybe 10 people said yes, but the reality is 20 people would have said yes if we stuck with the control script. It's really just about being patient with the data, looking at that. And businesses that I've worked with look at a lot of data. One of my friends runs funnels for small ticket offers between $37 to $80 with Facebook ads. And he'll test about $250,000 in ad spend to see if a product can work or not. And so it's like really, really, really large numbers to get the data. What I recommend is not statistically valid, but it's, I call it split testing with time, where we'll just talk about different hot buttons or topics and see what gets the most response. So this is really easy to do on Instagram, because you can see it visually. And it's a really simple example that you don't have to look at as I explain it. But if I post 30 videos of different topics, I can see the views on each. And maybe if I'm starting out, I'll get around 200 views for everything. And then I'll see one that gets 2,000 views. And that's interesting. Like, what am I talking about there? How did I start the video? What's going on that topic? How can I iterate on that and then make my new baseline a 2,000 view video and then see what pops off to get 5, 10, 20,000 views? So that's how I would do it. And with email, I have a special tracking sheet that I use with all my clients. And that's what we review pretty much every month. We just see, okay, these are the emails we sent out. And the stories, the emails that have a personal story get the most open rates. The emails that are a little bit longer, but speak to a concrete outcome for a B2 solopreneur or a B2B offer, those get the highest open rates. Things that don't get high open rates are more of the irreverent subject lines, things that are missing context that people don't know why they're opening them, which can work in other industries. But it's, again, testing that, and by testing, trying stuff out, not calculating, going back to high school math and calculating the power of a sample size that you need to get and running all these tests and doing all these things.
What's coming through for me is something we teach in our community, and something that I don't know if I mentioned on the show or not, but there's two different types of people on social media. There's consumers and producers of content. I think it's the same thing with email too. There's the producers of content, the consumers of content. Me, I am a producer of content. I'm not consuming emails. My VA is sourcing all these emails, just a way for someone to try to get, and I have a buffer there so they can't get my attention intentionally. So my VA is there to protect me like an offensive lineman. So I don't want to consume content on email. If I want to consume content, I go to a podcast, or I go to a mastermind group, or I go to like intentional communities that I'm a part of, my coach. These are the people that I want to consume content from. If someone sent me an email, it's not for me, but that's because I'm a producer of the content. I have to remember what percentage of the population are producers of content and what percentage of the population is a consumer of the content. And we live in a consumption culture where how many people get addicted to scrolling on their phone, swipe up for like hours at a day. I don't even have those apps on my phone anymore. I deleted them off my phone, so I can't be the consumer of content. So therefore, I, as the business owner, I'm just inviting you as a listener to think, not necessarily think like you, but potentially think like the consumer of the content. So that way we can build your business where you're adding value, and you're like, using that word again, you're inspiring, you're giving tools and resources and stories and inspiration to your audience with your social media or with your email or with your marketing, because you're the producer, they're the consumers. So obviously producers don't produce content for the other producers, they're producing content for the consumer. So that was something that just resonated with me. Anything else, Zach, that you want to hit on, if you want to click on anything we talked about or that final question there?
Yeah, it just reminded me of a story of a past client, Paul Green, the chief sales guy with Helen Tudor, who sells LinkedIn masterminds. And I was working with them because they were doing their LinkedIn thing. They were hosting webinars, lives, doing launches. As time went on, those became less and less effective. And so I worked with them to build this nurture funnel, essentially the same thing I do on LinkedIn, just to feed them a bunch of same thing I do on email, but on LinkedIn, to feed them a bunch of sales calls. The big thing with them is when we launched, we had up to $25,000 launch. I posted it on LinkedIn because I was really proud and it's good social proof. And he replied that since launching that, they went on to do another $100,000 in sales because it's a machine. You can just keep using it. But the reason I share this and what you reminded me of is that when you're making this content, it's really about those hooks, those pillars that you're talking about. Being a producer or a consumer, that works for me tactically in terms of different platforms. I think on some level, everyone has a bit of producer and a bit of consumer in them, that there's just some things that'll catch your eyes. And if you can focus on, hey, this is where my attention is, other people are likely going to have that same response. That's where I get a lot of my best marketing materials from. Not necessarily going and looking at different swipe or scrolling through Twitter or LinkedIn for different hooks or different content or whatever, but what caught my attention on that TV show that I'm watching with my girlfriend Sandy, or why did that billboard make me look for an extra 5 seconds? There are these principles we can use to get people's attention, and then have automations and systems around turning that into desire and action and creating essentially a marketing funnel around it. but not in a traditional marketing funnel sense, but just a step-by-step sequence, whether it's emails, whether it's social media, whether it's a paid ad, traditional kind of funnel. That's what I would say to that.
It's a great answer. I agree. I get inspiration from all around me to help create more relevant content as the producer. So I think it's a good reflection. Anything else you want to share, Zach, that we didn't hit on? Maybe I missed it because I know we went in a couple different directions. That one piece of the authenticity that someone might feel if it's like, you wanted me to be authentic, but then I hired someone to write my content for me.
Yeah, there's two pieces to it, right? I would say under all of this is there's a level of business that's under $1 million a year and a level of business that's over $1 million a year. And so if you're under $1 million a year, then you're going to be really focused on figuring out your sales strategy, your unique point of view, your personal brand kind of moat. And then over that $1 million a year, it's really about clogging the little leaks that you have in your systems, in your profit, in your marketing, in your sales. And so if you're under $1 million a year, I think that's the toughest part. Because you can be one of two people there where either you really love the marketing and the content and sharing your story and being the face of the brand and writing and doing all of that stuff. And I would say that's a really good time to give away your Legos or buy back your time or hire someone for this, because you can still be the author without being the writer there. And you can end up being trapped in a lower leverage task of spending whatever it is, 4 or 5 hours writing all of your content for the week. When really you can just use 1 hour to share your stories, keep your pulse on your market, and have your team execute the writing, the editing, the scheduling, the posting. And you have so much more bandwidth to grow your business or be with your family or learn how to rock climb or surf or whatever you want. The other side is if you're really struggling with content and you've given it a shot and it's just not for you, then it makes sense to buy back your time with that as well. Because there's someone in the world out there that loves to write content. They have all the time. They don't have the money. And you would be giving them an environment to really thrive. Because this is what I do with Dustin, where he just sends me, he's a very talkative person. He processes things by talking. Don't mean to be rude there. And that's why he does a lot of guest podcasting. He does a lot of these community masterminds, all that stuff. But writing just doesn't click for him. I like to write. So he'll send me voice messages when he's on rucks or between tasks. And I'll take those stories to really capture his voice, but go and turn it into a week's worth of emails. And so it's still his voice. It's still his authority, his authorship. But the writing, the words, the execution of it doesn't need to be him, because he's not adding anything more uniquely from him aside from his stories and his point of view.
It's a great answer. And I found page 83 in Buy Back Your Time, since we've been referencing it, rung 3 of the replacement ladder is marketing. What's the point? What's the so what of that is, yeah, if you want to have some sort of time freedom, we need to know what the high value activities are. What are the high value tasks? And frankly, marketing needs to get done by someone. And for me, just like Dustin, I do the same thing. I go Facebook Live, my strategy, I go Facebook Live, give value to my community or anybody who follows me. And then my team takes that Facebook Live and then pulls out the stories that I'm sharing, pulls out the relevant content from that. I send a bunch of images that are like up to date for me. And then they'll create fancy, nice, beautiful posts. So that's like my version of it. So it's still me. It's my authentic self. It's my story. It's my stuff, just like it's Dustin's stuff. We're just leveraging delegation. We're leveraging the replacement ladder. We're giving them the tools that they need to capture a voice, capture the story. Here's the resources, everything. Take all the resources, put it together and make it look pretty for me. So that way I could focus on these other parts of the business that needs attention. So I think it's a really great point there, Zach. And we're kind of gearing towards the exits here. Is there anything that we didn't hit on, anything I didn't ask you before we go into our final 3 questions, and then you could share with the audience how they could stay in touch with you? I know you have a pretty awesome gift for everyone. Is there anything else that we didn't hit on today that you want to capture in this recording, in this episode?
No, I think this has been awesome. I think it's been a good deep dive into tactics and even why you should use those tactics.
Cool. We like to ask every guest 3 questions. These could be short, hard-hitting, whatever comes top of mind to you. The first question we like to ask every guest is, what do you think the world needs most today?
Yeah. I like decisiveness, that the world needs decisiveness. There's just a lot of information out there. There's a lot of right answers out there, and there are much fewer wrong answers, but being decisive will be the fastest way for you to succeed regardless.
That's a great answer. And what are 1 to 3 books that you think people should read?
Yeah, so these are kind of weird, but I really like The Goal by Eliyahu Goldratt. It's like a Patrick Lencioni style fiction book about something called The Theory of Constraints, which is all about addressing bottlenecks and focusing on overall business function instead of getting caught up majoring in the minors. I really like 1001 Arabian Nights, and this is good for, it's a really cool story, fiction too, about a woman who saves her life by essentially telling stories all night long that never really end. So the guy keeps her alive to keep hearing how the story goes. And it's a really cool way of storytelling and open looping and all these tools. And I like The Pledge by Michael Masterson. He's just a very smart guy who built the Agora brand, which they sell $1 billion of info products, which is pretty cool. And he's just a very sharp guy if you're looking to get a lot of clarity on your business and life and systems to do both.
Nice. Great, Zach. Appreciate that. A couple new ones there for listeners. So add that to our resource library. And number three, what does it mean to you to be better than rich?
Yeah. I think now better than rich to me feels like community. Because if you have community, I'd say that's better than rich because you need time or wealth to be able to spend with that community, to nurture them. You also need level of fitness to, I go rock climbing with my friends, go for walks with my girlfriend. It's just living life with your community. And if you're trading all of your life for riches, you're missing out on so many more things. And if you have that focus of community, you're really achieving a lot.
Well, thanks, Zach. I appreciate that. And I'm sure people are going to listen to this episode. I'm sure they're going to want to stay in touch with you. I'm sure they're going to want to learn a little bit more about what you do for your clients like Dustin and some other individuals that you met. Where could people stay in touch with you? I also know you had a really cool giveaway with your 7-day email list revamp challenge. So where could people stay in touch with you? And what is that about?
Yeah. So I'm really excited about the 7-day email revamp challenge, or the 7-day email sales kit, because it's the quickest way I've seen for people to get interested leads from an email list, even if they don't mail it out for years and years and it's gathering internet dust and whatever. These are the simplest emails to send out to really channel that desire directly to you and shortcut a lot of the fancy marketing tricks that a lot of people talk about to get it all done really quickly in 7 days. And that's, we shouldn't be doing this.com, funny domain. We should not be doing this.com. And if you want to connect with me, active on LinkedIn, and it's ZachZeller22 is my little LinkedIn URL name. That's the easiest way to get a hold of me.
Great. So we should not be doing this.com. And that's where they could enter their information and get access to your 7-day sales kit and damp challenge for their email, which is awesome. What a great value add that people can help generate some more leads, bring their email back from the dead or back from its sleep. I think that's really great. So thank you for offering that to our audience and listener. Please do yourself a favor. Go to we should not be doing this.com. Take Zach up on his offer. I know, Zach, what's fun is you have an onboarding conversation coming up soon with Andrew. That's why he's not here. He's doing onboardings today. So we're really looking forward to supporting you with some of the administrative as you buy back your time as a business owner. For those of you that don't know, we are currently going through that rebrand from Better Than Rich to the umbrella of Time Rich. So I've been working continuously on helping busy business owners with their delegation plan. And it has been a lot of fun for me. Zach is someone who hopped on with me. We did a 90-day delegation plan. We figured out what are all the administrative tasks that he could get offloaded that he should not be doing. And we figured out some of those. And then what's really fun is a lot of times, not all the time, but a lot of times when we do that conversation in the delegation plan, our team of AI-powered virtual assistants can tackle a lot of those administrative tasks for a business owner. So with one click of the button, it's you could do this on your own and figure it out, which is totally cool, but we can tackle all of that for you. So if you want to go through that delegation plan, I'm still doing those. Again, I don't know exactly when this is going to be aired, but if it's not me, it'll be someone from my team. That's betterthanrich.com/90-day plan, 90-day plan. And we'll hop on with you, poke around for 30 to 40 minutes, help you figure out what to delegate during the next 90 days. And I think you'll get a ton of value from that. So if you want to take us up for that, you could go to betterthanrich.com/90-day plan and make sure you take advantage of Zach's offer of we should not be doing this.com and get your 7-day email list revamp challenge and sales kit. So as always, thank you so much, listener, for being here and giving us some of your time. Zach, thank you for your wisdom and helping our audience level up their email marketing. As always, until next week, leave today better than you found it. We'll see you next time. Cheers, everyone.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the show, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest from us, you can follow us on Instagram at @better_than_rich and join our Facebook group at The Better Than Rich Show. Thanks again for listening. We look forward to seeing you next time. And remember, leave today better than you found it.